Hello and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. 55 years ago, a young American scientist began one of the most important projects in the study of climate change, recording in detail the changing levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. His name was Charles Keeling, and his work would alert the world to global warming. Louise Hidalgo has been talking to his widow and his son.
It's January 1958, Hawaii. And on the northern slope of the world's largest volcano, Mauna Loa, a young American scientist is setting up an experiment that will change our view of our place in the world. His name is Charles Keeling.
He was a little bit like the Dutch boy with the finger in the dike, needing to take care of something that other people weren't necessarily noticing as being as important.
Charles Keeling's son, Ralph, says what his father had noticed was that no one was accurately measuring the levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere to see if they were changing over time. Charles Keeling decided that if no one else was successfully doing it, he would, as he himself later explained.
All these measurements were misleading, and I mean all of them. When I first made this pronouncement, I was 27 years old, and I was just past my schooling, and I was telling these people that the whole field was pretty badly screwed up.
Charles Keeling had studied chemistry, but his great love was the outdoors. So when a chance came to work on the west coast of America at the Californian Institute of Technology, or Caltech, he jumped at it. It was there, his wife Louise recalls, that he began developing his own system to measure carbon dioxide, going out into the wilderness to take samples of the air.
In the beginning, he was encouraged by a professor at Caltech to measure CO2 in different areas. And in fact, one of the first samples he took was on the roof of Caltech when I was giving birth to our first child. So I guess you could say that he was pretty ardent about that, but it was a matter of timing. He had to take the samples every 3 hours, I believe it was, throughout a long period of time. So when his first samples were being taken, that's when our son Ralph's older brother was born.
Keeling didn't care that it wasn't the most exciting science. Collecting samples gave him the chance to do what he loved, packing up the car with camping gear and his young family and heading off into California's forests and national parks, all in the name of science.
We took the children with us and we had to be away from anything urban, so we would go camping first around California area, so up to Yosemite, having a good time, but he would have to get up every 3 hours during the night to go and take these samples. And there is this rather well-known story of when he left his research notebook out on the picnic table. This was in early spring when it was very snowy. Nobody was in the campgrounds at that time. And we heard this noise in the middle of the night. And he got up with a flashlight, and there was a big deer that had taken the notebook in his teeth and was trotting off with it. And my husband ran after him with a flashlight and yelled, and the deer dropped the notebook. And we still have that book with some teeth marks in it.
Those notebooks would provide the first clue to how carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are changing, and to his lifelong work, which would see Charles Keeling dubbed the father of climate change science. Keeling realised that persistence and attention to detail were critical. Scientists already knew that CO2 levels fluctuated according to the seasons and to where you were in the world, but they didn't know why, and they didn't know if there was a global base level. Keeling wanted to use his new measuring techniques to work out if there was.
Then it branched out into getting air samples in more places in the world. They started taking them down at the South Pole. And not in the beginning, I think, there was any relationship to the warming of the Earth. It was just a matter of comparing different places around the world.
By now, Charles Keeling was beginning to realise just how vital understanding CO2 levels was to what man was doing to the planet. Other scientists might have moved on to other fields, his son Ralph says, but not Keeling.
even though the pressures from the outside would have said, oh, give this up, move on, you've done that, now it's time to do something else. But this was a different kind of science. This was not just trying to understand that there were atoms or some phenomenon that you could add to a textbook and move on. This was the planet moving under our feet, and you needed to stay with it. It was like the dike leaking. You had to stay with it. You couldn't just give it up or you'd lose the importance of it. So the science itself forced him to behave unusually as a scientist.
In 1956, Charles Keeling accepted a job at the prestigious Scripps Institution of Oceanography in California. They were interested in what he was doing, and by now Keeling had begun to realize that he needed to measure CO2 levels over the course not of months, but of years. And he needed to find the ideal spot to do it. He later explained why, where he chose, a former U.S. military site on Mauna Loa in Hawaii was perfect.
This location sits out in the middle of a huge ocean, away from contamination sources of carbon dioxide, which would have interfered with trying to determine what is going on in the world's atmosphere. If you had to have picked a spot anywhere which would have given representation of the whole world with one single site, Mauna Loa Observatory is probably about the best choice.
One of the first problems was that he wanted to set up this station at Mauna Loa, and Scripps Oceanography could not afford to pay for it. And he went to a man at the Weather Bureau in Washington, D.C., who had earlier tried to hire my husband, but he didn't want to work in Washington, D.C. So this man was willing to fund the operation at Mauna Loa.
In this ideal environment, 55 years ago, Charles Keeling began his project to take samples of CO2 year after year, every 10 seconds, for the next 40 years. The result is one of the most famous graphs in science. It would become known as the Keeling Curve, a line with a jagged edge showing a steep, relentless rise in the Earth's atmosphere of the greenhouse gas, CO2. The world could not absorb the excess carbon dioxide that man's activities were producing.
I can remember vividly sitting on the couch with him where he showed me a graph of the measurements of the CO2 and then laying over this graph another transparent graph of the temperatures of the areas, because in the beginning it was 1 parts per million, and then gradually he saw that every time he took these samples there were more parts per million. I don't think at first it was so much foreboding, but it certainly became that way when it was incessantly rising.
I do remember when I was in college, this would have been in the late 1970s, a classmate was visiting our house, and we sat at the kitchen table, and he was showing us his data just to explain to my friend what he did. And I remember my friend saying, wow, that looks like really clean data. Unusual. And it really was unusual. It didn't look like a stock market record flickering up and down and doing all sorts of chaotic things. It had this amazing regularity. And I think that by itself spoke to the magnitude of the forces that were at work. This was all of humanity's exhaust building up in the atmosphere, and he was seeing that superimposed on the natural breathing of the planet.
Several times he faced cuts to his funding, but somehow each time he managed to scrape together enough support to go on. Today, what he discovered is one of the few undisputed pieces of evidence in the global warming debate. Charles Keeling died in 2005. His son Ralph continues his work.
Louise Hidalgo. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.